And welcome to episode 27 of the Star Trek Discovery podcast. I'm Brian.
And I'm Ruthie.
And tonight, we're back to tonight, we will be covering season 2, episode 2, which is titled New Eden. But before we get to that, we've actually got quite a bit of feedback from the last episode. So let's open hailing frequencies. All right, so why don't you read Todd's?
Okie dokie. Todd is telling us what the baby shark thing is.
Yeah.
And I watched it briefly, and I was like, oh.
And no offense to anyone, but I watched it, and I was like, well, that's 2 minutes. I can't get back.
I know. It's so true. Oh, my gosh. Someone else, I think I fell into this trap earlier this year, someone was talking about baby shark something, and I was like, what? And then they started singing it instead of showing me a video. I'm pretty sure I blocked that out of my memory, and that's why I had no idea what he was talking about.
Well, I can honestly say that I never heard of it, and it was when it first came up, I was like, I don't know what this is. And and I saw the one video that Todd put up. It had over 2.2 billion views. And I'm like,
that's so crazy.
That's nuts. But anyway, no offense to anyone, but little inside baseball of me. I don't have any kids. I don't really even have any kids in my life because I don't have like, well, I'm an only child. My wife's an only child. So
I do have nephews and nieces and such things. And I'm pretty sure that's where I heard it the first time. And I was like, what are you doing? What is this? What are you doing? And I got a demonstration and I think I blocked it out.
All right. Next is from James. He actually had quite a bit to say about the last episode. He said, hey guys, great episode. To start, Ruthie, thank you for how you kind of started things off with the constructive criticisms of Discovery, setting things back before TOS and then having things inserted that don't readily make sense gets our defenses, or as I'll put it, our threat ganglia up. We want things to fit story-wise, and we hope that it soon does, but until then, we're on edge. I think a lot of people become afraid to give these criticisms because while they are constructive and we still love the show, people don't want to be classified as haters. It's warranted, though. This is how the writers and showrunners get the pulse of the fan base if they need to make a course correction. We can't just blindly follow along and say, oh, everything's just perfect. I've actually had to leave some groups on Facebook because they misconstrue constructive criticism as hatred for the show, and it kind of makes me sad. As a people, not only in our Star Trek fandom, but in general, we should be able to accept that if someone has a point that is well thought out and is constructive, that we should be accepting of it. Now, to get down from my soapbox, yeah, well, before I will agree with that sentiment 100%. And I think, like, people are, it's okay to hate the show, okay? What's not okay, and I saw this happen in, it's actually a group that Wes manages, that they had haters from a Discovery hate group that tried to infiltrate its group to, like, sour the milk, so to speak. And it's like, because they basically want to ruin it for everybody. And it's just like, no. That's not okay. It's like,
no, that's not okay.
It's not. People have to be able to love or hate. Like, you know, if they hate the show or they dislike the show, they're wrong. But
They're obviously, they have yes. no idea what good things are.
Yeah, but that's fine. It can be okay to just not be into a show. Not every show is going to be for you.
For I know a lot, everybody.
I mean, yeah. Ruthie, do you remember the conversations that we had for years about me and Game of Thrones?
I do.
Just listeners, so you understand, I did not get into Game of Thrones until probably season 6, and I would vehemently say I don't like it. It's dumb. You know, it's well produced, but I don't like it. And then I got a Chromecast one Black Friday that came with 3 months of HBO Now. And after I think you had been make me reconsider for like years.
Encouraging.
Yes.
I think you would really like it.
Yeah. And you did that. And then some other friends started piling on. And I was like, okay. And I ended up, when I finally did go through and watch it, I think I binge watched it in 8 days or something like that. But anyway, that's beside the point. And I guess we're at the point where it's probably time to say,
what is this bizarre segue that's happening right now? Can we maybe stay on point?
Yeah, we'll stay on.
For one time.
We'll stay on point to say that it's okay to hate the show or, you know, dislike the show. That's one thing, and it's okay to love the show, but you have to respect someone who has a different opinion than you. And I don't understand these, you know, trolls that are out there, you know, and it's true.
I don't understand that either because I don't usually spend lots of time on things I don't like.
Yeah.
If I don't like something, if I find I don't like something, I move on. I don't need to just stew over it and whatever. I'm just like, that's not for me. Thank you. And move on. I don't really feel the need to try. I mean, I've got to be really, really motivated to spend time and energy on things I don't like. There's too much other stuff going on for me to spend any amount of time on things that I don't like, things that make me mad, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. I can't do it. So I generally don't stick around for that stuff. So I don't understand that. You know, if you don't like it, fine.
Well, and you demonstrated that when you stepped down from The Walking Dead talk through, because you reached a point with the show that you weren't enjoying it anymore and it made no sense to keep podcasting about it. And, you know, that's how I deal with shows that I don't like. I don't like try to convert everyone to hate it. I just simply don't watch it. And, you know, I don't understand these people.
Yeah.
But there's a certain personality type that does that kind of thing. And I don't get it.
I do try and spend effort to get people to like things I like because I enjoy them and I feel like that's positive.
Yeah.
Spreading things that you enjoy rather than trying to spread things that you hate.
Yeah.
Trying to get other people to hate stuff. Why don't you get other people to like the things that you like? Why don't you spend time on things that you like? Mm-hmm. I don't understand that either. So I feel you, James. That's what I'm trying to say. I feel like people should be okay to feel how they feel.
Yeah.
I understand what you're saying.
Yeah. And the other part to address with that is we both love the show. I think it's, I mean, I know I do. And, you know, I'm pretty sure you do. You just said you did. But I don't look at the show blindly. I mean, look at last week and you're going to see tonight when we get to it. It's like, I have no's and I have some hold your horses stuff about an episode that I love. And it's like, that's just being intelligent, you know? Not everything that is written and produced is going to be perfect. It's impossible to be perfect.
Yeah, there are very few shows where I love everything about every episode.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the Game of Thrones, the very first episode was a slog for me. I watched it and then I was like, ugh. And I didn't watch any more for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, I went back and watched the rest of, I mean, everything that was available at the time. I can't remember how much it was, but I pretty much, I don't know, somewhere around the middle of the first season, I was, oh, this is, wow, oh, this is good. But I don't know. I can't remember exactly when, but at some point in time, I had the experience that you did. It took me like 8 days to finish watching it. But I did not go back and rewatch that first episode the first time. But I think it had been a few months. I was like, I just can't. I just need to pick up with episode two. I watched the first one fine. I just couldn't. It was too much. So
that was the source.
There you go.
Yeah, that was okay, maybe we have to say it again. But okay, Blaine, I'll put you on hold there. But seriously, though, with Game of Thrones, it was the way that I tried to binge watch it. I didn't watch, like, especially the first three episodes. I think I watched maybe the first two or something. And then I didn't watch the rest for like a couple of weeks. And then I watched one. And so I got to a point, like, especially around episode four or five, where I found it meandering a little bit. And I was like, who's this? What are they doing? And it was only after I went back that a couple of years ago now and saw it in its entirety very quickly that it was kind of like, oh. And then once I got to season two, it was kind of like, oh, okay. Ooh, yeah. Now I get it. So, but anyway, there's some more stuff in the feedback about certain things we said in this episode or last episode. And yeah, if the show, you know, there are some, to go back to the 2000 election, there's some dangling chads out there for this show. Things that need to, you know, things that are just hanging out there and eventually they have to be addressed and they have to be explained. And I absolutely love the show, but I don't blindly love the show. So that's, I think, the thing that we excel at, because both of us, I think, are really good at expressing our like love and things that we don't really like about any of the shows that we cover. And it's just, you know,
or if it just doesn't jive.
All right. So he continues, he says, Brian, you did so well with Reveille, but your pronunciation of Mr. Meeseeks was incorrect. And I said it Meeseeks or something like that, but I got it wrong. And I hate to say it, not to push the blame or throw it over the fence, but it was because James misspelled it. That I had no clue what he was talking about.
Oopsie.
So, but Meeseeks is a character from Rick and Morty. And I just was like, I went completely over my head. It's funny. He continues. He says, one thing I heard a lot of in the feedback that I disagreed with, and again, I'll agree with Ruthie. By the way, you got a whole bunch of feedback that said that they agreed with you on things.
Well, you know, I am awesome.
Was the whole Tilly being overboard and overacted. I definitely disagree with that for the reasons that Ruthie stated, as associating it with meeting someone with a large celebrity status. But I'll go a little further. I think we're incorrectly associating this as immaturity and that she needs to grow out of it. I look at it as a quirk in her personality, which may come off as socially awkward, but it's just her. I think there will maybe some immaturity and that as she grows, we'll see less and less of it. But to say that it should be gone, I think, is a little unrealistic. And I think that would take away from her personality. We all have our quirks, and hers is at least fun. Well, I agree with you 99%. And I think the main issue that I had with it is just there was just a little too much of it. And I think that they could have cut the bridge scene, like the go comms. I thought, like, for example, that was kind of dumb, or something. There was like just, it could have been shaved a little bit and it would have been less annoying. But I'll just say I had no problem with Tilly this episode. Next thing, he says, another thing I took note of was when they were in the asteroid field and took no precaution with the debris. I think this was purposely put in as a plot point to raise tension, but I think the writers knew we'd catch it, and that's why they were kind of tongue-in-cheek with it, given Saru's reaction when it was brought up, the shields were down. That's interesting. So you think that they intentionally put that in, huh? I don't know.
I don't know.
I tend to agree with you on that. I think you brought up the point about no shields being up and all that. So I agree with you. He continues, we're almost done, but he says, I also wanted to touch on the Jet Reno character, which I hadn't done in my initial feedback. She was a pleasant surprise for me. I had only known Tig from her stand-up comedy and found her to be meh. And really only because I couldn't relate to her content. She was excellent in the episode, and I'm excited to see her character evolve. That's all for now. Sitting on points and needles for tomorrow night. Is that supposed to be pins and needles?
I don't know. Maybe it's a slightly different version of that.
Scene. Yeah. Well, thanks.
Maybe. Is he Canadian? Maybe.
No, he's not. I think he's from Massachusetts.
Well, maybe it's something they say up there in Massachusetts.
Wicked. That's a wicked saying there. Anyway.
He's in a pack of cats. Sorry.
Anyway.
Sorry.
No thanks. Disrespect. So anyway, great feedback. Anything you want to add?
I mean, no. I appreciate all your comments. Thank you, James. I really enjoy hearing it when people say that they or my favorite phrase is Ruthie's right. Yes, that's right.
I am. We will hear that in a minute.
I know.
All right. Well, we got one from Kevin via a comment on the website, the blog post for the episode. So, Ruthie, you want to read this one?
Okay. Kevin says, "Hey guys, first time listening to your show. Some of your critique bugged me and wanted to comment to that specifically. Why don't they know about the spore drive 100 plus years in the future? It was mothballed but under a security lock and not talked about for over 100 years. Why didn't they just make one for Janeway? Well, why didn't they do anything really? Voyager's whole problem was contrived to make the series, but to stay within looking at it as real world. How long does it take to build a ship drive from unused 100 plus years technology, test it, find people to man it, etc., especially if no one knows about it in the first place? The biggest problem you don't touch on and hampers Discovery storylines is that warp drive is too fast. Things move at the speed of plot at every turn. Enterprise was too far away to help in the war. Really? Things move from Earth to Klingon homeworld pretty quickly. How many years was the war? Months only? Because everything moves so damn fast? As for the spy agency, again, enough time passing is plenty to explain how it's no longer known. This type of thing would be forgotten within 10 years, let alone 100. Anyway, enjoying the show. I liked your point about the haters are never going to be open to enjoying the show, and there is a lot to enjoy. This is the Star Trek you're getting. Enjoy it."
I 100% agree with that last thing. And that's, you know, that was a point that I don't think I made strongly enough last week. And that is that both of us would have designed a different show here, but we have the show that is the show. So it's a question of what can be done to make more people accept the show. They're not going to get rid of CBS All Access. It's not going to be free. Well, I have a news story on something to that degree, but this is the show that they've designed. The main creator, Brian Fuller, made some decisions that are, I think, dubious. But there's a lot to love here. And there are some things, and I think they're doing a lot of those things to make the show more palatable to the fans. And I appreciate that. And, you know, not every show. We all know that Star Trek Discovery had a difficult birthing process, as they say.
Oh, gosh.
And I think that, you know, all things considered, it wasn't a complete, I mean, the final product we loved. So, I mean, all things considered, I think they did fairly well getting it out the door, but it was not smooth, and it was not without its issues. So
for sure. I think I mean, I don't know. I kind of see what you're saying about why don't they know about the spore drive 100 plus years in the future. But at the same time, I feel like with the way that they are able to record keep and just pull anything up in the holodeck, like on the holodeck, it seems unfeasible that they wouldn't know about things that were only 100 years ago. I mean, we don't now necessarily because we didn't have the internet 100 years ago.
Yes.
But I think 100 years from now, they'll still know everything that we know.
And more.
Nothing will be forgotten. Yeah, well, and obviously, but nothing will be forgotten.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say. It's not like it's something that was only written down in some dusty book and no one can find that book. I mean, we all know once it's in the cloud, it's there forever. Yep.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's very hard to get rid of things on the internet, I think. And I don't know. To me, it seems like, yeah, I get it. Things from 1918 or 1919 or whatever are less known than things from whatever, 50 years ago or whatever, right. You know. But it seems like in the age of information, I guess, the information age or whatever they call it that we're in now, it seems like things will be less and less forgotten, less and less unable to be accessed, whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is if they had like restricted access to certain information or whatever, but I don't know. I'm not sure that I necessarily think it would be easy to give to Janeway. I just feel like it's, for me, yeah, the Voyager's whole problem was contrived to make the series. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are correct. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, there's no show.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about, like, generally speaking, for me anyway, generally speaking, why is it something that no one has ever even, like, mentioned in passing when they talk about faster than light travel or when they talk about warp 9 or, you know, faster than warp 9?
Yeah, and trans warp and quantum slipstream drives and.
Right. And no one has ever mentioned the spore drive as part of that conversation. I feel like that should be something that's part of that conversation. Not necessarily we know everything about it, but hey, didn't we one time try to do this or something when they're talking about those kinds of travel or whatever? That's what I feel like. Not necessarily that they should have given it to Janeway, but that it's something that should at least be there. And that's why I kind of, that's one of the things that, as I've said before, kind of stresses me out a little bit. Cause I'm like, why are they talking about this thing that no one's ever talked about before?
Yeah. And I have too. And, you know, that's like one of my big objections to the show or, you know, questionable things with the show. Love the drive. Think it's the coolest effect, but
I know it was really cool.
Yeah. But it does cause so many potential problems with canon. But I will say that before the end of this podcast, I will present a theory that I have that explains this possible once and for all until next week when it's proven wrong.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, mostly I agree with what you're saying, Kevin. So, and thanks for listening. I hope you enjoy the show and that we don't meander off topic.
Yeah. The one other thing that he mentioned that I was going to mention is the whole warp drive is too fast. And to an extent, I agree with you, but I will say that the Klingon homeworld, we know that it can't be too far from Earth because the Klingons were on Earth as early as 2151, because we see them in Enterprise. So they're not, I don't think they're that far. And I was looking up on Memory Alpha where the Vulcans are, and it, at least according to what they have listed in Memory Alpha, Vulcan is within the same sector. It's also within sector 001 of the galaxy. So it is actually really close to Earth. So if you agree with that stuff, I don't know how, you know, far away that makes the Klingons, but it's probably close enough that that distance is not 150 years away, but it's probably fairly close. And again, I say because they were on Enterprise. Any of the species that we see that were in Star Trek Enterprise, those species can't be all that far away from Earth because, like I say, they are close enough that in the 22nd century, an Earth starship was able to go there. So that's my take. So yeah, I agree with you to a certain extent, but I don't think those species anyway are that far. That doesn't mean that the space that the Klingons, you know, have within their jurisdiction is as close, but certainly Klingon homeworld is probably not that far. Anyway, so. Okay, so anyway, we've got more feedback. And this one is from our Twitter friend, Ken, from Chicago. And he starts with hashtag Ruthie's right. He says, reportedly, J.J. Abrams only reworked the lost pilot and premise from a scripted version of Survivor to make the island mysterious. Okay. Did not know that. And he was never the showrunner. I know that that was, what, Damon Lindelof and Carlton Cuse? So, yeah, understood. But it was made under Bad Robot. That was the point that I had. Then he continues, he says, hashtag Brian's right. Tilly was about at an 11 with the season 2 debut when she was about at an 8 by the season 1 finale. Hashtag less is more. So Ken agrees with me on that point. Then he switches again. He says, I agree with Ruthie. If you're flying into an asteroid field, do you really need to be told to activate shields?
Or do other kinds of active paying attention to what might be flying at you.
Exactly. Oh, and then he finishes off and says, I agree with Brian. The pod's launch was very Battlestar Galactica Viper launch. Star Trek usually shows escape pods leaving ships from the outside, not inside. Yeah, and, you know, I've gone back and I've watched the episode a few times, and really, that's the one that really sticks out as being, you know, one of those, like, what were they doing here kind of things. It's almost like they spun around the saucer for a revolution before it shot out. I don't know why I would do that, but it was weird. So it was like a cool shot. So it seemed a little like, hey, look what we can do. Look what our CGI budget can do. Anyway. All right. Next one.
Okay. Mark Decote says, you guys keep going on and on about the spore drive and why didn't they send the specs for it to Janeway. I'm going to stop right there and throw Brian under the bus, because I'm sure when you said you guys, you meant Brian, because really Brian is the one who keeps harping on this, not me. And yes, I'm throwing you under the bus because I never thought that. And I probably just agreed with you so that we could move on.
I'm giving that myself a fail.
So anyway, Mark makes some very good points, though. He says, are you forgetting that Discovery is not a starship that was later fitted with a spore drive? Discovery was engineered and constructed as part of the spore drive. The entire saucer section spins up as part of the process, and I'm sure the rest of the ship plays into it as well. Sending the specs to Janeway would be useless to her because Voyager wasn't built to accommodate a spore drive, and no amount of retrofitting would solve that. And I don't think it would have been feasible to expect Janeway to find a shipyard and build herself a whole new ship. You are absolutely right, Mark. And I hope it never gets brought up again.
I will just try to defend myself and say that I think what I'm getting at is, I agree, they would not retrofit or, you know, refit Voyager to become a ship with a spore drive. My thought, and I believe that there was an episode of Voyager that tried to do this. I don't remember. I want to say it was called the Dauntless or something. The NX-01A, I think is what it was called. But it was I don't remember the episode yet. I am doing a Voyager rewatch, but I'm still deep into season one, so I haven't gotten to this point. But there was an episode that it didn't work out this way, but the Federation or Starfleet sent them a ship that they would take home. So, so that's kind of what I was thinking in a way, is either they would send them a spore drive ship, or they would give them the specs to build a ship with the spore drive, and they would disembark the Voyager, you know, scuttle the ship, and then get on Discovery 2, or, you know, the NCC 1031A, and they would use that to come home. So that's kind of what I was thinking. It wouldn't be a refit. It would be an all new starship, and it would take years. It wasn't going to be something that they were going to be able to do in a short amount of time. This would have been a long-term project for Janeway, you know?
Yeah. But considering the fact that they were how many 100,000 light years away?
70,000 at the start, I think.
Yeah. So it would have taken them how long to get home traveling at warp 9 or 8 or whatever?
75 years, I want to say.
I think it was longer than that. It might have been. I feel like they were far enough away that it would have taken them, like, it would have been like their kids who were making it home. So they were not, I mean, they were not in having to stop and rebuild a ship for a few years is definitely better than trying to power through for however long. I have to look that up now. How long would it take? Yes, building a new ship would have been hard, but I mean, they could have cannibalized a whole bunch of the Discovery, like found a suitable planet, landed on it.
And I think that there was a time when they were planning to do that, not with that, but I want to say that they were trying to do that. Again, it's been quite a few years since I've seen Voyager, and yes, I am rewatching. So eventually, later this season, I will have a better idea of what occurred. But anyway, we should probably move on. I'll just bring up two things that I forgot to say last week, and that was, and I got a picture of it in the show notes, Geordi Beta. And that was the guy that was in the transporter room that had the visor on with this big headgear as part of it. And I had noticed him, but for whatever reason, I didn't put it in the show notes. But what did you think of that guy?
I don't remember seeing
him. Okay. saw him.
When you mentioned that last week, I was like, I don't know.
Well, there was another.
You were right. It was 75 years. Oh. You're correct.
Oh.
So even stopping for 5 years to build a new ship is less time than 75 years.
Well, since I gave myself this earlier, I have to give myself.
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah. Good job.
And it's worth saying, you deserve one too. So anyway, the other thing I forgot to mention is the Enterprise itself. It's supposed to have like system failures, but it looked like all the lights were on and looked like the warp drive was working and all that stuff. So what was up with that?
I don't know.
Maybe it was other systems, you know, maybe navigation or something was down, something that would not be visible, but it was something I noticed. The ship didn't look to be totally dead, like they said, because they said everything was non-functional except for life support. And we see the nacelles and bustard collectors and all that stuff kind of glowing, and we see lights on. So I noticed it, but I didn't really talk about it. But okay, so let's get to finally this episode after we've been recording. I think this is the longest that we've ever taken to read feedback from last week.
But we don't mind, so.
No, we love it. It's all good.
Please send in your stuff.
Send in your stuff. Season 2, Episode 2, which is titled New Eden. The teleplay was written by, or teleplay by, sorry, Vaughn Wilmot and Sean Cochran. And I know Vaughn Wilmot is new to the show. I think he's a co-executive producer I've seen his name on other shows, but I, without looking, I will look at some point to see what he's done before, but not at the moment. But anyway, he's new. Story by Sean Cochran, and I believe Sean Cochran is a story editor on the show. He was there last season. And Akiva Goldsman, who was last season executive producer, and now he's a consulting producer. But I also know that he's still involved as one of the executive producers around the Picard series. It was directed by Jonathan Frakes. Mm-hmm. And the description from CBS.com is as follows. A new signal appears, prompting Stamets' emotional return to the mycelial network and leading Burnham, Pike, and Awashikan, and I'll get to that in a little bit, to a pre-warp planet where they face a complex ethical dilemma. Tilly's overeagerness lands her in trouble, but when the planet and Discovery's landing party are threatened, her curiosity may be the one thing that can save them. And it got a TVPG, and it was originally aired on January 24th, 2019. All right, Ruthie, what would you give as a rating to New Eden?
I am going to give this episode a 9.
Ah, so you're consistently a 9. All right.
I'm arbitrarily a 9.
I'm going to give this episode a 9.5, much like I gave the last episode. And I'm going to call it, how about 9.5 stillies? All right. So we got some listener ratings. Ruthie, why don't you start?
All right. James Robbins says 10 general order ones out of 10. I shortened that to goo.
We got some feedback from a new person, Sven from Berlin. Hi, Sven.
Hi, Sven.
Welcome to the podcast. He says, I'll give this episode 8 out of 10 power cells with a very long lifespan.
Steve says, 9 out of 10 highways made of mushrooms.
And the funny, the even funnier thing is the next one, Mark DeCote gave it 8 out of 10 highways made of mushrooms. I started putting the feedback together and I didn't notice this at first, but like, wait a second, didn't someone else say this? So
that's funny. Yep. Then Fred from the Netherlands gives it an 8.5.
All right, so it's time for some yeses.
Yes.
All right. Just got the one yes in written feedback, and that was from James. He says, everything about this episode. Oh, is that all?
Oh, gosh.
All right. What do you got?
Tilly running around in her hospital gown.
Oh, it's worth saying that that scene where she left sickbay and she turns to the left and then all of a sudden you see her running to the right.
To the right.
Apparently that was not scripted. Oh. That was actually the brilliant work of number one, Jonathan Frakes. He directed that. And I guess Alex Kurtzman saw it in the dailies and he's like, Frakes, you brilliant man. Yeah. Yep.
That was pretty awesome. I was like, oh, she did the classic, went left then turned around and went right. That was awesome. Yeah. To me, that's a classic gag, and I love it.
It was. And I'll just piggyback on this because I thought, like I said, I had some problems with Tilly just in how scattered they made her. Seemed a little too much to me. But this episode, she was perfect. I loved her. Well, I always love her, but she was fantastic this episode and well-written. And just perfect all the way around. So I thought, like I said, I thought the balance was off last week, but not this time. It was perfect. And she was amazing yet again.
Yep.
All right. You have anything else?
I didn't really write anything else.
Okay. And the one piece that I had written down for the yeses is something that's going to be mentioned in the feedback. So I'm just going to scuttle it for now, and we'll talk about it when it gets brought up later. But yeah, I love this episode.
If I had to give another yes, I would say anything that Tilly does. Yeah. But I really feel like I say that every time. But it's because it's true every time. I love her. I just heart her. I pretty much love everything she does. Anytime she's on screen, I'm like, oh, it's Tilly.
I particularly love the moment when she was in sick bay, and I can't remember exactly what he said, but Saru kind of told her that, I think, how valuable she is or something like that. Do you remember exactly what he said?
You can't help someone else before you help yourself or something along those lines. Is that what you're talking about?
No, there was something else that I remember that, but it was something about, it was kind of like fatherly in a way, but it was also to convey how valuable she is to the crew and that she needs to not forget that before she goes out and does something so reckless. It showed great concern. And I love seeing that moment between the two. So I can't remember the specific thing. I started writing it in the notes and then I didn't finish it. Now I'm brain dead. So let's move on to the no's.
No!
Yes. I guess I'll give this one. James, he says, because this really isn't a no. He says, there aren't any. He says, I'm coming off a fresh watch of it, and there's nothing I can say negative about it. Okay, wait. Yes, there is. I didn't get to watch the episode until just now because we had torrential downpours in central western Massachusetts all day yesterday, and it caused foundation seepage in my basement, which had me tied up from morning till night, preventing me from watching when the episode dropped. Well, I'll say, sorry to hear about that, James. Hope that there wasn't any major damage, but I don't think you could fault the show for that. Right? So, okay.
Hang on a second. Saru said, I expect you to take better care. You're important. That's pretty much all he said.
Okay. That covers it.
But it was in a very fatherly manner.
Greg.
He put his hand on his shoulder.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, thank you for clarifying for me and the listeners.
Sorry, I was looking at the episode trying to figure it out.
That's cool.
But yeah. Okay.
All right. So it's time for our no's. What do you have?
I didn't write anything down, but I agree with your first one.
Yeah. Go ahead and say it.
I'm a little confused about the space donut. I didn't see a donut.
It didn't look like a donut to me.
I also did not see a donut. Maybe a space donut is not the same as when you do a donut in your car.
Yeah.
But yeah, it kind of looked more like a crescent roll.
Crescent roll.
A donut.
That's funny. That's the wrong kind of pastry.
Yeah.
No kidding. Yeah, and Mark mentions this in his feedback too, in his voicemail. And of course, you know, he knows donuts quite well, being where he's from. So, and I know it definitely from where I'm from.
I'm pretty sure most people know what donuts are. Because it doesn't have to be, you don't have to have the weather conditions that Mark talks about to know what a donut is. You can do it without. Yeah. You just have to have a really big parking lot. A really big empty parking lot.
Yeah, exactly. And that parking lot wasn't too empty. There's a lot of rocks there. I was a little confused about what they were going to use that piece of the asteroid for. She mentioned something about dark matter mycelial interface. And I don't really understand how that would work exactly. So it just seemed like Technobabble 2.0, like, was actual real things, but used in a combination that made no sense.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what she was talking about either. I thought maybe they were referring to things about last season that I can't remember, because it was very Technobabble and confusing a little bit, and they were talking about things for which I have no reference.
Yeah. I don't know. If anyone has anything that they can interject about this, but I really did not get the whole thing. It didn't make sense how dark matter could help interact with the spore drive. I don't get it. Here's one that kind of bothers me a lot, and that is, and I'm choosing to use this version of the name, Awoshikun, okay? Because I have heard that quite a few times, but they can't seem to figure out how to consistently pronounce her name. I've heard Awoshikun, I've heard Owasekun, and Burnham uses a version that I had never heard before, which is Awoshikun. And as someone who has a last name that for some people is hard to pronounce, I'm a little sensitive to this. And if you've wondered, the ones that are in the Facebook group, and if you look at it on iTunes or wherever, you know, the podcast is listed, my last name is pronounced Malosh. And this is how I tell people to pronounce it. The Maloshes wear galoshes. So anyway, but I just wish that, like, I literally heard three different ways to pronounce her last name in this episode. And I think they should, and they also even called her Owo, which I didn't mind that too much, but it is a little confusing. If you're a Deep Space Nine watcher, you might think Odo. So,
ha ha ha. That's funny. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe it's like a tomato tomato thing. Yeah.
And my last thing, it's a very minor thing, but in terms of the New Eden community or settlement or whatever, they didn't do a great job at helping us kind of bond with or identify with the townspeople. So the only one that we really get to know in any amount is Jacob. And we do kind of meet what they call the All Mother. I think she actually has a name, and I think it's mentioned later in the feedback. And I think Fred mentions her in a little more detail, but even, you know, the leader wasn't kind of well defined. And I think that if I could take off like a tenth of a point or something like that, it would probably be, or maybe 2/10 of a point. It was that although I liked what they did, it could have made us bond a little better with the townspeople. So
I sort of felt like maybe that was by design.
Maybe.
Like the only person we were supposed to identify with was Jacob.
That could be. All right. Speaking of Tilly, it is time.
Hello, this is Captain Tilly. What the heck? Hell. What the hell? Hold your horses.
All right. James tells us, or gives us a hold your horses. Is the Red Angel part of Spock's currently fractured psyche manifested by the mycelial network? I feel like this might be a plausible theory for the overall story arc of the season. It transcends space and time, which would be why it's been with Spock since childhood, and could be a way to mothball the spore drive after this season. Now hear me out. A lot of theories are suggesting the network is angry at Starfleet using it and that there's going to be backlash for it. I feel that even with that start of the episode and Stamets discussing how Hugh helped him get back from the network shows that it's sympathetic toward the Federation and is using the Red Angel as a kind of diplomacy. It's like it's saying, hey, look what I'm doing for you. I brought you to the Hiawatha so you could rescue survivors. I brought you to Terra Elysium to save a society of displaced humans. I'm manifesting as Stilly's deceased friend to help her come up with the solutions needed to do the saving referenced in points 1 and 2. I feel like as we progress through the season, we'll see the same theme. And at the conclusion, the mycelial network will have enough leverage to negotiate with Pike to petition Starfleet to scrap the spore drive and stay out of its domain. Just some wacky thoughts I can drive.
Well, I will say the Spock theory is interesting. And, you know, I hadn't really thought of that idea, but I mean, considering what we've seen Sarek be able to do, which is basically, you know, transmit his Katra across thousands of light years, or hundreds at least, maybe that's possible. I don't know, but I don't know how it could be Spock. So, and does he even know what the mycelial network is? So
probably not.
Yeah, that part of it I have some issue with, but it's possible. But the other thing about,
well, I mean, just because he doesn't know what it is doesn't mean he can't be tapping into it.
Yeah, true enough. But I think it, with some of what he said, though, I think he's on the right path. And we know that Tilly had this little green spore or whatever land on her shoulder in what's past his prologue. We knew that. And I'm thinking, well, I don't want to give away everything but I think that might have played into tonight's episode or this week's episode. And I am wondering if she was a vision, you know, from the network, you know, maybe that's what's going to happen with Culber, but I'll go more into that in a bit. But it almost seems like a Star Trek version of Quantum Leap right now. You know, the Discovery has to go to right the wrong of, you know, something that happens or rescue people. And that's kind of what it's feeling like a little bit. To me, it definitely seems like this isn't a natural phenomenon. There is some design at work, some alien intelligence at work, and, you know, we'll find out more about what this is as, you know, the rest of the episodes come out. But this is all part of the theory that I'll give at the end if we ever get to the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Do you have any hold your horses stuff?
No, I didn't.
All right. I have two. And the first, it has something to do with last week's. And that is a possible, it's possible we got another Lost reference because Jacob. Yeah. And mm-hmm. of course, last week we had NCC 815. So mm-hmm. I'm wondering if we're going to start, you know, every episode we'll see some kind of Lost reference. Jacob is maybe, of course, so. For those of you that didn't watch Lost, that is a character that plays heavy in, I guess, the final season, but it's kind of like a critical character. So, yeah.
Very true.
And one thing that I think we need a little more info on is this command training program, because I keep bringing it up.
Yeah.
And it's like, I have no frame of reference to this, so I don't know exactly what is the big deal with this thing. So Saru mentions that Tilly's like the youngest to ever enter this command training program. And based on what was mentioned with May, I think they said that May was born in 2232. So that would make, if it's 2257, that would make Tilly like about 25 if she's the same age. So it's like, really? Like 25's the youngest that anyone's ever entered the academy? Or the, not the academy, but the training program? That, okay, but that doesn't seem like it's that young, you know? Yeah. Unless my math was completely off or I didn't get the year right, but, and that's possible. And if I did get the year wrong, I will insert one of these. here's another one. And that is that Spock was in a psychiatric facility on Starbase 5. What happened to him?
That's a good question.
Yeah, I want to know.
The mycelial network is invading his brain.
Indeed.
I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on to our voicemails. So let's open hailing frequencies again. All right. Well, first is from Mark Decote.
Hi, guys. Mark from Ontario, Canada here, calling in with my feedback for New Eden. I give this episode 8 highways made of mushrooms. It was so cool that we got a bona fide away mission. Not only that, but we actually got to see a little bit more of the bridge crew working. OOCCUM or OWO got to go down onto the planet. So we got to see a little bit more from her, and she actually played a fair-sized part considering she's one of the background characters. And then up on the bridge of the Discovery, I'm really liking that they're using people's names more than referring to them as their station. For example, they're calling her Detmer instead of simply saying Helm. So I'm really appreciating that, and I expect that by the end of this season, we're going to know a lot more of these people. And I'm hoping, like Owo, we get to interact with some of the other ones more than just a few scenes on the bridge. Now, I don't know if it was there last week, but I noticed that there is an angel in the opening credit. So that whole thing we know is going to play into the season if they put it into the opening credit scene. And whether they are quote unquote angels or not, as Burnham put it, I am getting the impression that these red signals are in a manner celestial rescue beacons. That's two they've gone to investigate. And at both times they had to rescue humans that were in peril. And of course, because of the spore drive, Discovery is the only ship that can do it. Now, speaking of the spore drive, Stamets saw you in the network, but did he see him again when he came out after the jump? And Tilly asked him if everything was okay. He just said, not now. Is that because he did see you and he realizes that he's actually in there? Or is it because he didn't see anything and he was disappointed? I'm sure we'll get more of that. Now, I'm curious about that energy discharge from the asteroid that hurt Tilly. Was that kind of a defense mechanism because whatever is behind all of this knew that that asteroid was required for this mission? Or is there something more to that? And Saru knows 90 different languages. Has it ever been stated before if Saru was ever a communications officer? You'd think he would be with that many languages. And I have to say that even though they got all excited about pulling a donut in a starship, once we saw the visuals from it, it didn't really look like a donut to me. Trust me, I'm Canadian, and with our winters here, I know what it is to do a donut in a vehicle. And it didn't look to me like Discovery was doing it. Now, lots more questions. Who is this May? What was her name? Ahern? This person that Tilly was seeing, or Stilly? What's that all about? Now, down on the planet, I know it's not impossible, but really, 200 people were saved in that church, and from those 200 people, there were 7 different religions represented. Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, Buddhism, Shinto, and Wicca. I know it's not impossible, but what are the odds? Now, I don't necessarily have any turbo lift up or turbo lift down moments for this episode, but I do have a couple of hold your horses. Are you telling me that's the same tablet Spock had as a child? Really? Can you name me one piece of technology you had 20 years ago that you're still using today? With so many advancements in technology and it happening so fast, why would Spock still be using the same tablet he had as a kid? Now, when Michael was showing the tablet to Pike, and he asked when they saw that sketch of the universe or whatever, and he asked, is there anything else? And she says, no. Well, what about all the stuff that she was looking at last week as the episode was coming to an end? Did she show him any of those images? Now, I was really wondering why the inhabitants of New Eden didn't question these people from the north, especially considering these, again, people from the north were asking so many questions. Shouldn't they already know about their history? Like Michael asking about science and if there was any other theories. If they're all part of the same ancestry that got to this planet, wouldn't it be presumed that these people should already know that stuff? So wouldn't they be questioning why that they're being questioned about their beliefs in that? And another thing that really got my head scratching is when Owo mentions that the battery on the transmitter is dead. Well, if the battery's dead, how can any amount of jury rigging keep it broadcasting for all these years? That was never explained. And finally, plugging in that power source and getting the lights back on the church, man, was that bright. I would not have wanted to be inside that building with those lights on. Well, that's it for me. Can't wait to hear everybody else's thoughts on this episode. And thanks, guys, for everything you do with the podcast. Until next time, this is Mark from Ontario, Canada, out.
Well, thank you so much, Mark. And as usual,
yeah. You
know what you get. Thank you so much, Mark. I'll just stop there because this is a long one. I originally had in my yeses that I love that we're getting a lot more of the bridge crew. So I 100% agree with you there, Mark. Owo or Owoshikun, she was, you know, actually got to go on a landing party, which reminds me, who is chief of security now that Tyler is gone? I don't think we know that yet, do we? And, of course, Detmer, I think, was much more a part of this episode than ever before. And we're actually seeing, like, lots of personality on the bridge crew, especially those two. So I'm loving it. Hope that we get to see a lot more from them. So great for the show. The red Angel was definitely part of the credits last episode. So just, you would wonder about that. That is in fact the case. I had wondered about Saru being communications officer after he mentioned that he knew 90 languages.
Yeah. I didn't think about that, but I did notice the Red Angel in the credits.
Yeah. And I had wondered if that the Red Angel might have taken away people from other places of worship, not just that one church. I don't know. That might have been more clear than I am letting on right now. Maybe it was the one church, but I didn't understand it that way. And plus they said there were, I think, what, 11 or 10 settlements all over the planet. So that's why I'm wondering if maybe that's what happened. So there's, you know, a synagogue, a mosque, et cetera, temples and other places, you know? So we'll see.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, no way to know.
I do not know.
I thought the same thing about when Stamets came out of the thing. I thought the exact same thing. Is he upset because he did see him, or is he upset because he didn't?
Yeah, that's a good question. And I
mean, I wrote that down almost word for word, what Mark said.
I had wondered about that, but when I saw it, I thought that he hadn't seen him, and that's why he was didn't want to talk. But it's just as plausible that he did see him and he was sad because it was, you know, so quick or whatever. So I don't know. What do you think? Do you think he did or you think he didn't?
I don't know. That's why I wrote down. Is he disappointed that he didn't see Hugh or upset because he did? I don't know. That's why.
Yep. Yeah, that was a bad, bad question on Mike. good call on the tablet and the battery. I would agree. It's like I had to switch to a new computer because this 4-year-old computer had basically been on its last leg. So, you know, not to throw shade at Dell, but
well, yeah, I cannot think of a single piece of technology I am using from 20 years ago, except for pencil and paper.
I mean, for the longest time, I had a TV that I used for probably 16, 17 years. And that was, I thought that was a long time, but by the time we finally gave it up, it was, the picture was terrible. It's just, that's the only thing I can think of. I actually had a calculator that.
I don't even have a VCR anymore.
No, I don't either. I had a calculator that worked for like 30 years with the same battery and Sharp. It was a Sharp calculator and it worked for 30 years. But when the battery went out, and it stopped working.
Oh, that was it, huh?
Yeah, there was no changing the battery. It just didn't work anymore after that. Yeah. But that's the one thing I can think of that I had that lasted like 30 years. Yeah, I had also thought about that. They kind of hand wave on the people from the north kind of thing. They really didn't question it. It did seem a lot of exposition there trying to explain the story, but
yeah,
it wasn't a major thing. You know, it kind of fit the story. They had to get that. They had to explain it somehow. So
I kind of just assume that, I mean, it's been 200 years and they are technologically stunted in their growth because of things not working anymore, I guess, and they can't repair them or what have you. I sort of thought that they must have done a little bit of recon on the planet or something to know where to say they were from. And like, did they detect more sparse settlements in the north or whatever?
Yeah. I do not know. It wasn't really well explained, but
yeah. I mean, it would be really bad if someone landed in Russia and they said, I'm from the north, and they were like, you mean the North Pole? Or something.
Yeah.
Or Canada, and they said north, and you're like, no, people don't really live north in Canada. They just live in that Southern Belt yep. area, because Northern Canada is very cold and icy.
Yeah, like I think Edmonton is one of the cities that is further north than like any of the major cities. I think that's the one that's the furthest north. Yeah,
yeah, north of the latitude that Alaska's on.
No, not that far north, but.
Oh really? Oh,
but.
I would have thought it would be.
No.
Or whatever. I don't know. I don't really know. I just know that Alaska's north. Takes a long time to get there if you drive. It's very far away.
Have you been there?
And it's very huge. No, I've never been to Alaska. And frankly, I have no desire to go. I do not like being cold. Oh, man.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the map. It is not close to Alaska. But it, I believe that it.
I don't mean close to Alaska. I mean on the same latitude. Yeah,
that's what I meant. As far as latitude, it's not.
Not on the same latitude.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you so much, Mark, again. And as usual, you make our podcast better. All right. So next we have a voicemail from Fred from the Netherlands.
Hello, Brian and Rosie. This is Fred from the Netherlands with some feedback for Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 2. This was a nice episode. Not so high-paced as the previous one. And by the way, I upgraded my grade for the first episode, which is an 8.5 by now. When I first watched the episode, it was too high-paced. I didn't understand it. And so it got from a 6 at first watch, and then a 7 at second watch, and then third watch, and listening to your podcast resulted in this 8.5. Well, this one gets an 8.5 straight away. But perhaps that also has something to do that I was able to watch it twice, although it resulted in recording this at 1:30 a.m. I was quite amazed about that they reused the Spore Drive again. Of course, on the internet and on the podcast, there is a lot of discussion how to get the Spore Drive in canon and how this will be put away so that we don't have problems when Kirk is going to lead the Enterprise. Using it now again and again doesn't make it easier, because in the history records, more and more will be mentioned about the Spore Drive. What was a yes for me is seeing Shia McCarty as the All-Mother in this episode, so the church leader or village leader, because she played a role in my favorite show, Orphan Black, as the mother of Alison Hendrix, one of the Orphan Black leader clones, of course. Actually, she is in real life, the Tia McCarty, is in real life the mother of Mackenzie Donaldson, who is an associate producer on Orphan Black. So more or less the most important person on Orphan Black, not from the actor side, but from the producing side, aside Graham Manson and John Fawcett. What was clearly a no for me was the ionizing radiation in the atmosphere that would mean a destruction of all life, and that it is imminent in 64 minutes. Of course, this gives attention, but yeah, this is a trope that is used so often. And of course, transport is not possible, communication with a landing party is not possible, and even a shuttle cannot be used. I think they should have figured something else out. But on the other hand, they use the Spore Drive, which is quite nice. And one other no is when Tilly is blown away by the piece of the asteroid, that when she falls down, that she already has a big stream of blood out of her ear. This happened so fast that from a medical standpoint, this is not very logical to have already so much. So she would fall on the ground and then it would come out and pour out. And perhaps she sees something in the beginning, but the whole stream that's already on her cheek is just too fast, too much. So that's a little medical nitpick. The general order is, of course, a very problematic thing in this case. I think Pike did the right thing to go back to Jacob and explain what happened the last 200 years outside their world. I found Burnham a little irritating, and Sonequa played it very well, so she had to play that role. But what I found irritating is that she is not believing in no way that it could be a miracle, and she will prove it by scientific way, as the science officer, of course, that it's something that she can explain. One other thing is a bit, having an attitude, saying something that these people deserve to be, saying that these people deserve to be integrated into modern society. Well, if modern society is so good, so perhaps they are happy in their new Eden, as Pike also states. So I think Pike had a better attitude here towards these things than Burnham. Okay, that was all for now. I think it's 2:15 a.m. I'm going to bed. Greets, Fred from the Netherlands.
Well, thank you so much, Fred. Believe me, and I told you this personally, but we do appreciate you spending that kind of time. We know it's late for you. And again, we're just, this is a timing issue for us. It's going to be difficult for me to do the podcast on anything other than Friday night. There's going to be a cascade that I'm going to have to deal with because of the, because of doing two podcasts. So that's why we're trying to establish the Friday. But we really appreciate you getting the feedback and, you know, considering, how much time you have to do it. It's, you know, great details and everything. So,
yeah.
And we should also mention, I didn't mention this last week, Fred has taken over the image that we have to do for the episode. Like if you go to the blog post, you see, and on Facebook, you'll see this image that has like something from the show. And it'll say the Star Trek Discovery podcast episode, you know, 27. Well, Fred's taking that on for us. So he's doing them. So because he's our image guy. So, you know. Yeah. Yeah. And thank you so much for doing that. So definitely, Fred, you deserve the Showcase Award. And I'll stop it there. Only due to time. I don't want to have a 3-hour episode this week. So, anyway, I had, when I saw that all mother character, and I know it's in the feedback. I don't remember the character's name, but when I saw her, I knew her from somewhere, but I could not place from where. So thank you so much, Fred, from naming that she was Allison Hendricks' mom on Orphan Black. And I'm surprised, Mark, you didn't mention it because Mark's podcast, of course, he did an Orphan Black podcast, quite a good one. We've mentioned it a few times here. But anyway, so I knew her from somewhere. I could not place her. And even though I made such a thing about, oh, we're going to get us what he called it, 8.5, he didn't actually give it a name. So my bad. To that, I have to give myself a, or should I say?
Incorrect.
It definitely seems like we've touched a nerve with people about the Spore Drive, though. We've gotten a lot of feedback on that this week. I agree with you about the timing of the disaster. It is a bit of a contrivance, but I think that it's kind of designed that way because we are definitely seeing that there is some guiding hand at work, so to speak. So
guiding force. Yeah, I know I've said this before, but honestly, most of the time, you have to allow for a certain amount of coincidence.
Yeah.
Or you're not going to have a show.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, nobody wants to watch a boring daily life. You've got to have some kind of something, some kind of, I can't think of the word, some kind of motivation or some kind of, you have to have a little bit of coincidence in order for there to actually be a show.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's just nothing. That's pretty much it. Leave it at that.
Yeah, and I know you've brought that up both on this show and on The Walking Dead, and I know that I've brought up, you know, coincidences both with you on The Walking Dead and then after you left The Walking Dead. So, yeah, I do harp on that sometimes. So I would agree with you, Ruthie, on that. I've kind of realized, yeah, you can't really make a story if you don't have some coincidences sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, there are varying degrees, of course, so let's not get into the minutiae, but pretty much in order to have a show, you need to have some kind of big events, because this isn't Star Trek Seinfeld, this is Star Trek Discovery. Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, to that, the only other thing I was going to bring up was you were criticizing Burnham for kind of not accepting the possibility of there being a miracle or whatever. And I will say that you have to remember her Vulcan upbringing, and, you know, the Vulcan way is the way of logic, and I don't believe essentially religion, their religion is logic. So mm-hmm. I would not expect Burnham to be anything else but a skeptic. However, it is worth saying, and Fred, you probably haven't seen it yet because I know it plays later in at least the UK. I don't know when it plays in the Netherlands, but did you watch the Orville last night?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
I started it, but I didn't have time to finish it.
It's funny how this happens. I know this happened in season one at some point where the two shows covered kind of similar ground on the same week. And that was the case this week. They had a first contact kind of situation, which this kind of wasn't, but they had a first contact that also had a religious element. And the difference that, well, I don't want to get into too much detail, but I thought that Star Trek, the writers had much more of a balanced view of the religion versus, and how they dealt with it versus the, how they dealt with it on the Orville. So I don't want to go into details. I don't want to spoil it, but I'll just say that I thought that the way that they handled it was a much more evolved way of dealing with religion in this case. And I really like what they did. Like, you had a Washington who was a non-believer, not really like vehemently against it, but sort of knowing the ways of this kind of, like, they said that she was part of a Luddite colony or something.
Luddite. Yeah. Yeah.
Which is interesting. I'd like to hear more about that story. And Pike, who I guess his father was a teacher who taught both science and religion. So that was interesting. So he seemed much more open to it. And I appreciated his point of view. And I just thought how it was dealt with was really well done, intelligent, not talking down, not saying that, you know, this is crazy or you should be beyond religion. They were very respectful of the beliefs. So I thought it was cool. Anyway.
I thought that was, it's the classic science versus faith discussion that has been had over and over and over again. But I think what I thought when I heard Fred's feedback was, I agree that I think Michael was kind of not, I mean, yes, biased against faith, but not just that, but that to me, it kind of seemed like when she said, bring them to the modern world, that she sort of needed to have her perception, I guess, expanded a little bit to maybe realize or think about the fact that there's more than one way to live in the world or live in the universe or what have you. There's not just, we don't know. Maybe they're perfectly happy to be not in the modern world or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, maybe they're just fine being, I guess, in what she would probably consider a backwards type of lifestyle or what have you. So I thought that was sort of her bias, is that she felt like, of course, everyone would want to be brought up to speed, I guess, more or less with what's going on now, rather than just being left to their own devices.
And I personally appreciated the use of General Order 1, which I've heard some podcasts kind of like be confused about this. General Order 1 is the prime directive. The prime problem directive with it, the reason why you're hearing it called General Order 1 is it was at least many episodes before the original series called it the prime directive. So they are just simply following the same nomenclature as the original series did. So
I call it goo for short. Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything more you wanted to add about Fred?
I think that's pretty much it.
Okay. All right. We got one more voicemail, and this one is from Steve.
Hi, Brian and Ruthie. It's Steve, and haven't quite finished my rewatch of New Eden, but wanted to send in my thoughts before the deadline. I sent my feedback into the Facebook group, or I sent my rating into the Facebook group. So my yeses are, I loved seeing the actor Anthony, is it Anthony Rapp that plays Stamets, in his struggle upon going into the mycelium network, because you could see that on one hand, he wants to go in there because if he sees Culber, he will be happy, but he might not want to come back. And then when he comes out of the chamber, it seems apparently that he didn't see Culber, and so that disappointed him. So you could see all that. I just love the way he played that. And Tilly's fluently to Mr. Saru when he said that he spoke 90 Federation languages, it made me chuckle every time. The only no I really have is Spock being in a mental hospital. It seems a little strange to me, but I understand they needed to answer that question for us, or we would be continuing to ask that question. And I'm sure we're going to get something more on that in future episodes. A little bit of feedback. The first signal they followed brought them to the shuttle that needed to be saved. And then this time a signal brings them to this planet with Earth people that needs to be saved. I thought that was, that's an interesting thought. And what about the other six signals? Did they draw some other group maybe to someone who needed to be saved? And that's where they went off, or not really sure, about that. Maybe we'll get some more in later episodes. The church, when they first walked in there, really reminded me of the church in the series finale of the TV show Lost. And I do want to say that I suspected Tilly was seeing some kind of a vision from the very beginning when that girl appeared to her in the infirmary, because, you know, we've never seen this character before. And even though that's not unheard of, it's still the fact that nobody else interacted with her, and she just kind of is only there when Tilly's around. So I was suspecting, I'm glad they gave us the payoff of that. And I'll be interested to see if she continues to have these kind of visions, or what happens going forward. I can't wait to hear what you guys thought. Talk to you later.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. And of course, we have to give it again. Well, anyway, thank you so much, Steve. It's kind of funny, but I'm feeling like Oprah. It's like, you get a showcase award.
You get a car.
You get a showcase award.
You get a showcase award. That's funny. Oh, that's funny. Yeah. I was just going to say, I also knew that there was something up with her from the get-go.
Yeah.
For the exact same reason. She didn't interact with anyone else. The comments that she made.
Yeah, because it was very like, oh, who's this person? Mm-hmm. And
she sort of also just kind of appeared. Like, she didn't walk in from anywhere. She was just kind of there.
It seemed that way.
Yeah.
And yeah, like when Saru and the doctor came back in the sick bay, you know, she just kind of backed off and they didn't seem to
acknowledge her.
Oh. Yeah. Now, I want to...
And she was sort of acting like, oh, no, you're in trouble, which I thought was kind of funny.
Yeah. I really liked the character of May. It seemed like she kind of had a girl crush on Tilly. kind of, you know, oh, you're the coolest person I know, kind of thing. So I am curious to know how she died. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it said that she died, I think they said, 2252. So quite a few years ago, it seems. But I would like to know how she died. Like, were there any circumstances that, I don't know, could have involved the network, or, you know, what have you? Maybe she was, who knows? Maybe she was a character, or maybe she was someone who was involved with like early testing of the spore drive and got killed in an accident or something, for all we know. It would be interesting. Now, mind you, I guess Culber wasn't killed by the spore drive, but killed after them using the spore drive. So I don't know, but I am curious to find out how she passed away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only other thing I would say about the May character is I was wondering if, so this is a person from Tilly's past, right? A
yes.
child that she knew, a childhood friend, I should say, from whatever, shall we say, grade school-ish, middle school at the most.
Oh, yeah. It was middle school, and it was the Musk middle school. So Elon Musk right. gets another reference.
Right. Okay. So middle school. And so did her mind just extrapolate what she would look like as a grown-up?
That's a good question. I'm guessing so.
Because she obviously did not really know her as a grown-up. They kind of, I'm assuming based on her non-remembrance of her right away and all that stuff, that they yeah. kind of lost touch. So that's something I was thinking about. Like, how did she know what this person would look like as a grown person?
I'm guessing that maybe she had some kind of, I don't know. I don't have an answer. I'm trying to come up with an answer, but I don't really have one.
It's okay. You don't have to have an answer. I'm just saying.
I must have an answer to everything.
I feel like no. I thought that probably her mind just extrapolated.
I think you're right. And like, is she the Red Angel, or is she just somebody in the mycelial network, much like Cobra? I don't know. And I am so curious, though. I want to know more. Hopefully we will get to know more.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so many questions about May and what's going on there.
And he wrote in after sending that voicemail. He had a couple other things that he wanted to mention. He forgot to include that he loved May's "your mind is so much fun" comment.
I agree. And that's what clinched it for me.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, she's not real. She's some kind of something that's not a real person. And I don't think that Tilly really heard what she said, you know, when she yeah. said that. I don't think Tilly was really paying attention, because if someone had said that to me, I would have been like, wait, what?
I just took that for the girl was infatuated with Tilly, because, you know, I mean, let's face it. How could you not be infatuated with Tilly?
True enough.
Yeah.
But to me, it was whatever this creature is, manifestation, person, thing, whatever, really likes the way that Tilly's mind works, is what I think.
Yeah.
And one other chosen to interact with her in this manner. I don't know why, but.
Well, I think to get her to A to B to C, you know. What was that?
That was my phone.
Oh.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. He also added, did the asteroid deposit something in her brain? There was blood on the side of her head after that explosion. And it seems like Fred kind of mentioned this too, because he was mentioning, you know, how much blood there was. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Maybe?
Yeah. I hadn't really thought about it until I heard both you guys mention it, but I don't know. We know certain things are going to happen to Tilly based on the trailers. So maybe that's related. I don't know. We'll see. But the things we see in the trailers are so quick. Like we did see in at least one of the trailers, we saw Tilly and, you know, getting shot, kind of not shot, but the little piece of asteroid kind of blowing up or shooting her down. We saw that in the trailer, but we definitely didn't see her get hit in the head. So I don't know. It was interesting, but I did like how Tilly came to the bridge, kind of saved the day. Mm-hmm. So I liked a lot. I did not catch, but you know, I mentioned the Lost reference, but I didn't think of the church, but that's a good catch.
Yeah. True.
All right. So unless you have something else for Steve, let's move on.
Okay. All right. Martin says, oh man, this season is just thrilling fun so far. I loved episode 2 and how it felt so very nostalgic with so many away missions that Picard and crew had. Colony of humans on a planet that is impossible for them to get to. Now solve the mystery. Love it. Very familiar feeling, and yet Michael and Pike are more like the new Spock and Kirk dynamic. Love the uniforms, the tech, special effects. The whole look of this show is simply amazing.
Indeed.
Yep.
And I was going to say this earlier in my rating, but I didn't say it. Now I definitely want to make sure that I say it here. To you haters out there, if you can't acknowledge that this is Star Trek after this episode, you need to have your head examined. You need to go in a psychiatric facility like Spock.
Word.
Because to me, this is Star Trek. It was practically textbook Star Trek, a Star Trek story. And I love the fact that it was your typical Star Trek episode, yet it also fit into the greater story arc. I think this episode was perfect. It was exactly what this show should be. And I want to see more episodes like this. So
right on.
All right. Next is James. He says, by the way, the term general order is another military reference. Every branch has them. There are basic general orders of a century we all learn either just before or during boot camp. Of course, what eventually becomes the prime directive isn't currently a part of those orders, but every branch is different, and Starfleet would definitely have it as the first order. Aha, though. This is the prime directive. General Order 1 is the prime directive. So it's just, like I said earlier, it's not called that for whatever reason. But we will not interfere with the progress of, you know, the general evolution of a civilization. Pre-warp civilization. Yes, thank you. This is the prime directive. So, you know, it might not be called prime directive, but it's prime directive. I challenge, while he said the same thing I just said, I challenge any Discovery hater to watch this episode and try to tell me that any part of the writing on this episode isn't Star Trek. Amen. You betcha. I couldn't say it better.
You betcha.
You betcha. It carries on themes and issues that we've seen since TOS and is Trek Storytelling 101, just with a visual update. Yes, I 100% agree. 100% agree. This is exactly a Star Trek episode. I love it. I love that we're away from the war and we're actually getting to the stories that I want to see told, and the reason why I love Star Trek in the first place. Another directorial win for Frakes as well. Why is he not the permanent director? Every episode would have Emmy consideration. Well, to direct every episode is a huge commitment. The only places you ever see that happen is on a comedy. I don't think you see dramas that have the same director for everything, but for him to be an executive producer in that, he'd probably have to move to Toronto. And every show has like a producer director, like on The Walking Dead, it's Greg Nicotero. On this show, it's Olatunde Osunsanmi. And I don't know when he's directing next, but we'll definitely be seeing him very soon. But he's like the producing director. So I imagine that, you know, at Frakes' age, I mean, he doesn't need to, you know, he's still got all the next gen money. And, you know, he's, I think, 65, 66 years old, something like that, mid 60s. So I don't think he needs to do that at this point. This episode has me so floored and really has strengthened my commitment to the series. Not that there ever was question on it to begin with, but it shows that the things that Kurtzman had been promising in the offseason are likely to come true and that the show is in good hands. Man, I could not say it better. I'm just 100% in agreement with you, James. Something I forgot to include in my wacky theory, which he got into with the in the Hold Your Horses, which also helps tie in Calypso to this season. This also ties into something Mark Decote commented on. The Crossfield class is designed around the spore drive. Great catch on that, by the way, Mark. This is similar to the Navy's F-14 Tomcat, in that it was also designed around the armament it carried. But at the end of the season, we could see Starfleet retiring the Crossfield class and sending it out to deep space to keep it hidden and not to be used ever again. the AI being installed by Section 31 and all files sealed to help with that. You could say, well, that ends Discovery, but we know the tradition in Starfleet is to carry on a name. We could potentially see an all-new and reclassed Discovery come Season 3. Like NCC-1031A, like I kind of said. Like I said, this is just some babbling that my brain has come up with from what we've seen so far. And I'm sure I'm way off, but I'm having fun, damn it. Yeah, all
as long
that,
as you're having fun.
I think, like you said, at some point, we know from Calypso that it's going to go off into
the wild blue yonder
space somewhere. And I think because of the nature of the spore drive, they don't want to destroy it. So they kept it hidden somewhere. That's kind of my thought. And we don't know how that's going to work, but I hadn't thought of this. But yeah, we may see Season 3 with a whole new Discovery, and it might even be a few years later. Maybe they're up to Captain Kirk's day. Who knows? But anyway, great thoughts, great feedback. Thank you so much. I won't give you a showcase award, but I will give you this. And I only say that I won't give you that because I've been giving away too many. All right. Next one.
Okay. Next we have Todd. And Todd says, it's very interesting that both Tilly and Stamets are seeing dead people now, and I'm not sure what it means. It seems to be connected side effects based on proximity to sources of spore drive fuel. If dark matter can be used as fuel for the spore drive. Whether this is also related to the Red Angel is unknown. I also have an inkling that Mira Georgiou is connected to the Red Angel as well. Whether she was in an accident and the Red Angel came to fix her and she's like an emissary for it now. And as I say that, could these ghosts be either early versions of DS9 wormhole aliens or possibly Q Continuum members? Another solid episode in Season 2. I do actually like the subtle humor thrown in. When the thing with Tilly first happened, I got very protective and was like, don't you dare hurt our Tilly! But then she was fine for the most part. Yeah, yep. That was very shocking.
Yep. And, you know, I just realized that I never played the thing that I was going to play, and I want to play it. So I'm going to play it right now.
Okay.
When we heard that the episode was called New Eden, I thought of this.
Head now to Eden. Yeah, brother.
And to that, I have to say, I'm so glad that we didn't see the space hippies. That is one of my least favorite episodes of the original series. Herbert. I wonder who would have been the Herbert in on Discovery.
No, who knows?
All right. Well, is there anything you wanted to say about Todd's?
I think it's interesting that they could be wormhole aliens or Q Continuum or, you know, whatever that kind of stuff. It's interesting to think about. There are so many possibilities.
I could see some similarities there. I don't know what that would mean, though, in terms of Deep Space Nine, if they were the wormhole aliens, but they certainly could be. I like the theory. I just don't know what that means for the future. Mm-hmm. So,
I don't know either.
Yeah. So our next piece of feedback is from a new contributor, Sven from Berlin. Thank you so much, Sven, for giving us feedback. It's good to hear from a new contributor. Yeah. He says, hi, Ruthie. Hi, Brian. First off, you are doing an excellent job with the podcast. I listened to you since episode one. Wow. Oh, thank you so much, Sven. Good to hear from you. And what took you so long? Anyway, he continues. He says, here are my thoughts on New Eden. Man, this was a real Star Trek journey. I really enjoyed this episode that reminded me of TOS, Star Trek, or TNG. No wonder with Jonathan Frakes at the helm, an unknown planet with a very human outpost, which origins nobody can explain. I am sure we are all reminded of some classic episodes. Although this episode wasn't as cinematic, or should I say dramatic, as the season opener, but who is the girl talking to Tilly who saved the day again? I guess something major happened to her now that she is communicating with the dead. I wonder what angel-like species we will encounter in coming episodes. And let me say one thing about Pike. Anson Mount has managed to act himself as Pike straight into my heart. Man, isn't he the closest thing to Kirk we ever got or get? Heroic, team player, risky, smart, not always in line with regulations. Even more, I love Michael, but I wouldn't mind if the series will focus on Pike way more. Hope he comes to stay permanent. Nice to hear that the Prime Directive once was Order One. Sven out. I give you this one too, especially for a first time feedback. Yeah, and I think that came in through our feedback form at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. So
awesome.
Thank you so much. Do you think Pike is Kirk-like?
In some ways.
I think that he is in some ways as well, but in other ways, I think he's, you know, kind of, I think we mentioned it last week. He seems less ego-driven than Kirk. He seems much more collaborative, much like, I want to say it was Mark that said this. I could be wrong last week, but that Kirk, the way that, you know, he got Decker to have to give up command, I think that's kind of like a big difference between Pike here and Kirk there. Kirk would have just taken over the command of this Discovery and not really, you know, worried about whatever Saru did. Whereas I think Pike is much more of a, in some ways, like he's much more of a collaborative leader, I think, than, and he's thoughtful. And he's such a fantastic character. I think I love the way that he's written and I love the way that he's being acted. I think so far he is a home run to me. I could really see putting him very high up in my list of captains after this season. And it kind of sucks because, you know, eventually he's going to go back to the Enterprise. So I don't think he'll be staying too much longer. He can't, I don't think he can stay past this season because we know he goes back to the Enterprise. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
You have anything you want to mention about Sven's feedback?
No, just that I agree that Anson Mount is doing fantastic.
Yeah, he certainly is. All right, so that's it for the feedback we got this week. We're at our own notes. So, Ruthie, what do you have?
I saw your notes here about, I also loved the mention of the Clark's third law. Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic, and that any sufficiently advanced extraterrestrial intelligence is indistinguishable from God.
Yes. And I went to look that up to see where that came from. And that is called Shermer's Last Law by Michael Shermer, who wrote that in Scientific American in 2002. So yeah, so that was interesting, but that's the first mention of that. And there's a couple of interesting variations on it. But in case you were wondering, the two laws that come before it are these. When a distinguished but elderly scientist states that something is possible, he is almost certainly right. When he states that something is impossible, he is very probably wrong. And then the second law is the only way of discovering the limits of the possible is to venture a little way past them into the impossible. That's, I love that one. That sounds very Sherlock Holmesian. And it was kind of funny because I was looking into some variations, and another one is very similar. There's two versions of it that are almost identical, but any sufficiently advanced cluelessness is indistinguishable from malice. And also said any sufficiently advanced incompetence is indistinguishable from malice. So the first one is called Clark's Law, but Clark is spelled without the E. And then there's Gray's Law, the incompetence part. Then there's a few other ones too, but I got a kick out of that. That's supposedly combined with something called Hanlon's Razor, which is never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity. Oh, I don't know how many times I've had situations in my life when you want to think it's, you know, ill intent, but it's just stupid.
Yep.
People being dumb.
Yep. Very true.
Yep. Did you notice that Pike called it Federation Standard?
Yeah.
So English
is Federation Standard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I did notice that, I guess, at some point in time, they started calling it Federation Standard instead of English.
And I don't think I've ever heard that mentioned in Star Trek, but I was like, that makes total sense.
But would not the language evolve over 200 years? Yes, I will answer that question for you. Yes, it would.
It's called Firefly.
I mean, it's called any kind of evolution of language ever.
Yeah. Well, and a good example of that as well would be in The Expanse, like the
Belters.
The Belters. They speak in a language that's really weird, but it makes total sense, you know, that it would evolve that way.
Yeah. The only real difference between a dead language and a not dead language, or the reason I should say why Latin is considered a dead language, is because people are not actively speaking it anymore,
right,
other
right.
than to, you know, whatever they do for the, you know, Roman church and that kind of stuff, medical terms and those sorts of things. But that's not the same.
Stelliatory or whatever it is. I don't think I said that right, but
I have no idea. That's, but it's not the same as, for example, the English language is still being spoken by a wide number of people. Same with all the other spoken languages, French, German, Dutch, et cetera, Finnish, blah, 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 Spanish, yada, 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 Chinese, Japanese. Anyway, the point is when people speak a language, it naturally evolves. And so that was the only thing that I kind of was thinking, they're speaking Federation Standard, but would it be the same Federation Standard 200 years later? I don't really think so.
I agree. But at least for our eyes and ears, it is. So, yeah. And I just looked it up. It is called Prototaxitis Stellaviatori. So.
Okay. What is that?
That's the spores.
Oh.
The strain of mycelium. It is a species of fungus. So that.
So that's the scientific name.
Yeah. That's what they call it. But anyway, not an actual, you cannot find the fungus that makes the spore drive. So, or the spores, sorry. And Terralysium, obviously, combination of earth and, or Terra, I should say, which is earth, and Elysium, which I had to look up to see what Elysium means, and it's the place at the ends of the earth to which certain favored heroes were conveyed by the gods after death. Or if used as a noun, a place or state of perfect happiness. So I thought that was kind of fitting, that name. Anything else you wanted to bring up? I have one thing.
What's your one more thing?
I had to look up the Hamlet quote. So what something that Pike says there in the ready room. And by the way, we didn't even talk about that. Did you notice how good the ready room looks now? It looks like an actual ready room, unlike the way Lorca had it.
I did not pay very good attention to that, I guess.
I found it brighter and there was more color in there. And I even think I might be seeing more color on the bridge too. I don't know if that's true or not. I'd have to go back and look, but it seemed like this episode, the bridge actually had more color in it. Brighter.
Could be.
More, you know, more welcoming than the stale, cold bridge that we saw in season one. Anyway, I was looking up the Hamlet quote that Pike mentions, and the line before it, Horatio says, "Oh, day and night, but this is wondrous strange." Hamlet replies, "And therefore, as a stranger, give it welcome. There are more things in heaven and earth, Horatio, than are dreamt of in your philosophy." So that was interesting. Anyway.
Yeah, there are more things in heaven and earth.
I like this episode. Overall, I think as a science versus faith type of argument, I guess, classic argument. But I've never really understood why science and faith can't coexist.
Yeah, I would agree.
I immediately refer back to the quote from the first section of the show, "Any sufficiently advanced technology is indistinguishable from magic." And any sufficiently advanced extraterrestrial intelligence is indistinguishable from God. So, to me, therefore, you could say that, at least as far as my understanding goes, is that God has a perfect understanding of science mm-hmm. and intelligence. Therefore, he is a scientist. So to me, I don't see how you can say that if you have science, you don't have faith, or you don't need faith, or if you have faith, you don't need science. To me, they are perfectly intertwined. To me,
yep.
I feel like that. And it seems to me that, I mean, maybe I'm just biased, but it seems like more often that it's the scientists who look askance at the faith people.
Yeah.
But
we see that maybe with Burnham here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They always look at it and think that's hooey. I'm like, well, maybe.
When you get to see this week's Orville, you'll have to let me know what you think of it.
Well, I'm like 5 minutes into it, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe 10 minutes. I can't remember. So I'll finish it at some point in time.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for this discussing this episode. So we've got just a couple of really quick things to bring up in news. So time for the shipwide announcement. Well, one thing I wanted to bring out is that the replacement of After Trek was, of course, on last week, which is a red carpet. But the actual thing that is replacing it was on Facebook today. And it's plays within the Facebook, I think it's on the Star Trek Facebook page, and they're calling it the Ready Room. So it was on today. I think it was about a 15-minute or so interview with the showrunner, Alex Kurtzman, and executive producer, Heather Caden. And I think they're very much like a partnership there. Like, it seems like Kurtzman works with Caden on all of his projects. Mm. So, but I don't think she's involved in the story, but she said a couple of things that were interesting. She said she's obsessed with Barry Wiseman. I thought that was funny. So,
but, so are all of us.
Yeah. And I don't want to spoil anything, but there were some interesting things that were said in that interview. And if you're kind of curious to see what kind of things we might see in the rest of the season, there were some hints there in the interview. Nothing, you know, too elaborate or detailed, but just some thoughts about what we're going to see in the upcoming episodes. So there's actually a link to it on the Facebook group, so you can find that now. The other thing I wanted to bring up is another CBS thing, and that is that they have made the season premiere available to stream for free. You do not need to have a CBS All Access account. You probably need a CBS account, but I don't know that for sure. But basically, you can watch the season premiere without having to get a trial. So, and I believe the same is available via Space, the space.ca website in Canada. So, So if you've got skeptics out there, friends that, you know, haven't been willing to pay for CBS All Access, this is a good chance to give them some exposure to the show. I would say that I don't think that they need to be up on season one to watch the season premiere. Would you agree?
I mean, it might help.
Might help, but I don't think it's absolutely necessary because we don't see the spore drive. It's definitely a new captain. So,
but they do immediately go into that in episode two. So
yeah. But I mean, if they're just going to watch the first episode, I mean, anyway.
Well, if you watch the first episode, you have to go back and watch season one before you watch episode two.
Exactly. But it might be enough to wet their whistle, so to speak. So the other thing, and it's not really a news item, but I wanted to say.
Incorrect.
Sort of. And I actually pulled some of this out of the episode in the edit. But I mentioned that Sarah Mittich, who was playing Arium last season, has been replaced by Hannah Cheeseman. And that is true. But what I did not realize last week when we recorded is that she's still on the show. She was, I don't think she was in this episode. I did not see her in the credits, but she was in last episode playing a character called Lieutenant Nielsen. So, and we see her actually in the scene where the artificial gravity thing gets set up, whatever that was called.
Mm-hmm.
So she's one of the ones that like gets that set up and lets it build itself.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still on the show. So I thought that was interesting.
Cool.
All right. So that's pretty much it. So Ruthie, I need a break. Could you take this part over until we get to the support part?
All right. If you would like to submit your feedback, please go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. There you can do text, audio, or you can use the SpeakPipe widget, or you can call us at 304-837-2278. You can also use our email address, StarTrekGSM@gmail.com, or you can post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/StarTrekDiscoveryPodcast, or you can tweet us at StarTrekGSM. But we would really like for you to share and retweet us, especially when we post that the new episode is up. And we are the official podcast of the TV Time app. So you can leave us feedback there by commenting on the post.
And look at that. It's a good thing I looked. But we did get a rating from Ken from Chicago. Sorry I messed it earlier, but I'll just say it here. Ken gave it 8 out of 10 really long-lasting power cells. Much like that other one we got. He says, pros, exploration main plot. They went to a new world, Michael and Pike mirroring Spock and McCoy debates. Tilly toned down from an 11 to an 8. Having a bridge crew member on the away team, advanced ET intel. I didn't see that one before, but just as I was looking it up here as we were ending, I wanted to sneak that one in. So sorry we didn't get that on earlier, Ken, but we got you now. To support us, one way to do it is to subscribe to us in whatever podcast client that you use. You can find all of the podcasts on the Golden Spiral Media Network, especially in Apple Podcasts, by going to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. And that will take you to many of the shows that are within the network. While you're there, if you are in a that gives allows you to leave a rating like Apple Podcasts, you can help us out by giving us a rating or review. And to that end, and it's been a long time since we've been able to say that, and I almost went into the Enterprise theme. It's been a long road. Anyway, thank you to Fox in Socks 1 for her 5-star review. And I wanted to highlight it. And she says, like others, I've listened to other Star Trek podcasts, and you are definitely superior. You have really good insight and intelligent conversation, not just goofy banter. I really enjoy listening, and it's signed Donna. Well, thank you so much, Donna.
Yeah.
We love to hear that. Thank you so much. A very good review. We really appreciate it. And I must say to you, I will also give you this.
Yeah.
For such a good review.
Yep.
All right. Other ways you can support the network until we finally get a Patreon of our own. Go to goldenspiralmedia.com/support. And you can also hear me covering The Walking Dead and Fear the Walking Dead on The Walking Dead Talkthrough. And that's, you can get to also at goldenspiralmedia.com, or you can go to walkingdeadtalkthrough.com. And Ruthie, she used to be my co-host on there until she bailed out, and I'm still there because I'm a glutton for punishment. That's not true. Right now the season 9's been really good, but there were a couple of tough seasons there.
Okay.
All right. Our next episode is Point of Light, and I do not have what it is written, directed, or the description, but I think it may have something to do with the Klingons, because if you remember, Kalash said something about, you will find me at that point of light pointing out to a star. So I think that's what it's got to do with. So we'll probably see Laurel and Tyler. And since she was on the Klingon homeworld, we will probably also see Georgiou, or should we say Mirror Georgiou or Emperor Georgiou. So I wanted to end this podcast with my theory, because I was holding that back. And I'll be real quick because we've been on forever. I don't know what it is with this season. There are long episodes, but anyway, I'm thinking with May appearing to Tilly, maybe she was killed as part of the mycelial network. Maybe, like I said, maybe she was involved in the research or whatever. Maybe Stamets knows her. And we know that the only one that can pilot the spore drive is Stamets. So several things in play here. I ask the question, is it possible that Culber could be the Red Angel? And could he be the source, basically the Red Angel, be the source of the Enterprise outages? In other words, only the Discovery can be allowed to investigate this. Miraculously, maybe we'll find out that the Enterprise suddenly, you know, is able to function again. Who knows? But that's what I was thinking, is that the whole thing, the Red Angel did it. And since we know that the only one that can enter the mycelial network is Stamets, and I'm wondering, I hadn't thought of this, but it makes perfect sense, the way that you totally explain how the spore drive is not given to Voyager is by making it not work. And you make it not work because the only pilot, the only one that can actually drive the spore drive, is Stamets. And if he meets with Culber in the network and decides never to return, or somehow sacrifices himself to end up in the network at the end of the season, that's how you solve the spore drive.
Yeah, that would kind of put the kibosh on it.
Yep. So that's what I'm wondering, you know, and maybe Section 31 or Starfleet decides that they don't want to completely get rid of the ship. They don't want to scuttle it. So they park it in a safe place. And, you know, it's parked so safe that nobody comes across it until Calypso. I don't know.
No, either. Who knows?
Yeah. So that's what I'm thinking, though, is that, and maybe for whatever reason, they never come across any more tardigrades, so they can't get any more DNA. So that's my theory.
I like the idea that the network is off limits.
Yep.
That seems more permanent.
Yep. It does too. It does to me too. And that's part of what James said, that I'm also like thinking, is that they basically say you can't come in here. It reminds me of 2010. Because if you recall that movie, there's kind of like a standoff where it's like something like all of yours except Europa. Basically, a man is told, you can go anywhere in the galaxy, but stay off Europa. And so stay out of this mycelium network. Anyway.
Stay out of my sandbox.
Yeah, stay out of my sandbox. All right. So that's it for this yet again supersized episode. I'm Brian.
I'm Ruthie.
Peace and long life.
Live long and prosper.